The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we have something special in store for you today. We're going to talk to a guest who I've interviewed several times over my radio career. He is Ralph Moss. He is a medical writer who has devoted his professional career to the study of cancer, and he brings a unique perspective on cancer because he's been in the belly of the beast. He has been assistant director of public affairs at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York, and he learned about conventional therapy there, but he also developed a sophisticated understanding of alternative cancer therapies over the years. And that's the reason why we have him here today. He's here with Eric Marola. Eric is the producer and director of a new movie that features our guest Ralph Moss, and it's taking a critical look at the cancer establishment. It's based on Dr. Moss's experience at Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital in the 1970s. The movie is entitled Second Opinion. Dr. Moss has written innumerable books and articles. He also has a website that we're going to talk about. It's a website that helps patients find answers about different approaches to cancer, both conventional and alternative. It's an important resource. We'll talk about it more during today's podcast. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest, Dr. Ralph Moss. Ralph, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And one of the reasons, you know, you're actually here in New York because your movie is about to debut. In fact, it's about to debut today. That's Friday the 29th of August, correct, here
correct.
In New York?
Correct. That's right. At Cinema Village, which is on 12th Street in Manhattan. What's the number, Eric?
22 West 12th Street.
Yeah.
22 West 12th Street. Okay.
And it'll be starting at 7 p.m. On Friday, and then it's going to go on and air for a week after that at different times a day. But if people were to check secondopinionfilm.com, they can see where it's opening in New York, and then it'll roll out from there to Los Angeles and Portland and Seattle and San Francisco.
Right. So this is a national event. It's going to be previewed. But you know, for those of you who can't get to the theater, this is going to be available online, correct? It's streaming through Vimeo, and you can buy DVDs online. You can go to secondopinionfilm.com. Okay. So first of all, you know, I actually heard one of your interviews on the subject of your new movie, Second Opinion, and it was on Coast to Coast, which is a radio program that airs. It actually airs on the same radio station that my weekend program airs. It's on WOR. Mm-hmm. It's an overnight program. And you were really, really quite out there mm-hmm. in terms of your criticism of the conventional cancer establishment. It was really interesting to hear that on you know, what essentially is a conventional radio station.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that Intelligent Medicine listeners already take kind of a critical view of the medical establishment, but you are very, very outspoken in your views about how the cancer establishment operates. So tell us about that.
Well, I'm critical. I'm not a rejectionist. I don't say that people should never do conventional therapy. It has its place, and surgery in particular in early stage disease is the wisest course if they can get the cancer and get rid of it. radiation also has its role, and even chemotherapy has a role in the pediatric cancers and a few other kinds of cancers. But if we take science at its word, we need to see proof of extension of overall survival from taking the various drugs that are recommended. That's the scientific method. And all too often, there either is no actual life extension from doing chemo, or it's a very small amount of life extension at a tremendous cost, both in terms of toxicity and in terms of dollars.
So another way to state this is that in spite of claims of tremendous advances in the cancer field, you're stating that they're probably few and far between, and that in effect we're not really turning the corner on the war against cancer.
That's right. And the war on cancer was launched in 1971 with the promise...
At the beginning of your career at Memorial
Sloan
Kettering.
Around that time. So the promise was that they would cure cancer in time for the American Bicentennial, which came and went with, I remember, op sale, or there was some wonderful fireworks, but I don't remember a cure for cancer occurring July 4th, 1976. So it came and went, and nobody ever mentioned it again. But meanwhile, the funding kept going, and it's run into something like $100 billion now in terms of the funding for research, basically based on a deception, because the inside people at that time, nobody really believed they were going to find a cure in less than 5 years, but it was what they needed to get the public on board with this massive expenditure of funds to do the research. So
kind of like the Man on the Moon project, you know,
right.
It's like the can-do attitude of America in the 60s and 70s was, if we, you know, just, you know, set a goal and we'll attain it.
So with the atom bomb and with the space race and the race to the moon, that the science was in place. These were great engineering feats, especially the moonshot, tremendous engineering feat. I don't want to diminish it, but we spent $100 billion on the shot, the moonshot, and cancer was getting very little money at that time, a couple of million. So people said, you know, if we would spend $1 billion a year on cancer research, we'd have a cure in no time. Well, as I say, 40 years have gone by, and the cure rates for stage 4 cancer, actually curing people, it's still elusive. There are rare cancers that respond to rare drugs, but as many of your listeners know, if you get a diagnosis of really advanced cancer, metastatic cancer, there isn't really all that much that can be done, except maybe with some of these drugs extend your life.
Yeah, we're talking maybe life prolongation,
maybe
in some cases.
A few months.
Yeah.
A few months.
At sometimes at tremendous cost, because many of the new drugs that are being brought online, they're approved not on the basis of curing cancer, but merely on the basis that they can prolong life for a few months at a cost of sometimes upwards of $100,000 per year per patient.
Easily. But colon cancer, stage 3, where chemotherapy does, or 4, where it does work somewhat, the cost of it went from $500 for the drug 5-FU to $250,000 for the FOLFOX or the FOLFIRI regimen. This was pointed out by Leonard Saltz, who is the head of gastroenterology at Memorial Sloan Kettering. He was complaining about this. So, you know, there's a tremendous, let's say, exploitation, to put the right correct term on it, of the cancer patient population as a whole and of the society as a whole in order to deliver minimally effective drugs at the maximum tolerated price. And it's pretty ironic because alternative treatments like Laetrile, which we feature in our new film Second Opinion, these were criticized for exploiting cancer patients. But the exploitation, if it existed, was like 1/100th of what's going on now with these conventional cancer drugs.
Well, in the movie Second Opinion, you know, one of the themes of that movie, it takes us back several decades to the Laetrile controversy.
Right.
So the question is, you know, why relitigate this question of Laetrile? Laetrile these days has become synonymous with cancer quackery.
That's right.
It's thought to be outmoded, obsolete, you know, yesterday's great white hope that has basically been debunked.
Right.
So why are we going back to look at Laetrile?
First of all, in the experiments that were done at Sloan Kettering, Laetrol was more effective at stopping the spread of cancer than any other agent that had been discovered up to that point, and pretty much any agent that's been discovered since. The most effective agent yet discovered for preventing the spread of cancer. So there's an intrinsic value to the substance that makes it extremely important that the tests be rerun and the positive tests be acknowledged. Secondly, a terrible injustice was done because the leading researcher at Sloan Kettering, whose name was Kanematsu Sugiura, was slandered by his own employers, as we would say today, thrown under the bus, because they wanted to come up with a negative conclusion about Laetrol. So I think when you enter something fraudulent into fraudulent conclusions into the medical record, you distort and skew the whole future direction of research. And that's what they did. The direction of research would have gone in another way had they acknowledged what they acknowledged in private and what I heard them acknowledge in private and what they said in private to the NCI, National Cancer Institute, that Laetrol was very effective in their animal studies and that there should be fair testing in Mexico of this compound for two things: quality of life and stopping the spread of cancer or metastases. If they had stuck with that position, which was their position up until March of 1975, then all of research might have been different, because Laetrol was a relatively non-toxic substance and a very inexpensive substance. So if research had gone off in that direction, we might have made greater discoveries, we'd have more effective treatments, and they wouldn't have done this horrible thing of demeaning the reputation of their most outstanding and senior most scientist, Kanematsu Sugiura.
Well, you say in a way that Laetrol became a kind of a whipping boy for relatively low-cost, non-toxic, naturally derived therapies.
That's right.
Pushing the future research direction into the area of high-tech, expensive, patented medications developed by the pharmaceutical industry.
Exactly. Well put. It's basically they diminished and they denigrated a whole class of compounds. It wasn't just Laetrol. Laetrol was the stalking horse, if you will, for the entire world of complementary and alternative approaches to cancer. So by denying any effectiveness at all to that particular treatment, they set back by many years the cause of fairly evaluating nutritional therapies, diets,
on an even playing field.
Correct.
Right.
It was completely. All the people who believed in those treatments then had to fight from an uphill battle to get any kind of consideration for these other non-conventional or non-toxic treatments, because every time you tried to raise the issue, you got Laetrol, the supposed failure of Laetrol, thrown in your face. And besides that, they created a dead zone around the study of this particular class of compounds, which are the cyanide-containing compounds found in the fruit of the plants of the rose family. That would be apricot kernels, peach kernels, bitter almonds, which are fascinating scientifically and actually turn out now in laboratory studies to be very effective against cancer cells. So this was a promising area of research that for 30 years after the publication of Sloan Kettering's paper, nobody in their right mind who had a career in science in mind would go near them. And you couldn't publish on them. You couldn't say one good word about it because you'd be treated as either a quack or friendly towards quackery. And if it's reminiscent of really of the McCarthy era, where maybe there were a few genuine communists out there, but 100 times as many people were tarred with that brush in order to make any sort of left-of-center statement be suspect for its patriotism. Well, the similar thing happened with Laetrol. It's like you didn't dare go near any of these treatments because people could see clearly what happened to Dr. Segura and what happened to anybody else who basically said, wait a minute, there seems to be some disconnect between the negative statements you're saying and what really went on. So it changed the course of medical history, that study. It was really an epical study. If you read the paper, and I have spent an entire book now, doctored results, going over that with a very fine tooth comb to try to suss out the what actually happened on an almost like day-by-day basis, how they came up with the so-called negative conclusions. But the data is there. If you read it, that's why Segura agreed to go along with allowing them to publish his data, because he said to me that someday, somehow, somebody is going to resurrect this and going to come to the going to realize what really happened here. Well, I think that day has arrived. I think that it took 35 years, but the day has arrived.
I'm going to turn to Eric Marola, who's the producer-director of Second Opinion. Eric, you know, you're a younger generation of filmmaker. How did you find this story compelling? This is a story that's literally a dredge from the past. What moved you to get involved in this film project?
Sure. Having a career essentially in television and film, but more in a post-production sense where I hadn't really directed my own before, it was a sort of a bizarre coincidence that I just walked by the Strand used bookstore, saw the title, The Cancer Industry, on the shelf. I enjoy reading nonfiction, especially at the time. I was sort of also going through a transitional period career-wise, wanting to find something that I really had more passion about versus the sort of corporate jobs that I was working within. So I read the book repeatedly. It was sort of, it just, you know, like anybody in life, you find something that really, really sticks to you. And that was one of them. So I actually just was so affected by it. I started trying to reach out to Ralph. And at the time, I hadn't really done my own documentary before. And also, as you can imagine, you know, this Ralph has always been sort of typecast with this because that's his beginnings in this part of his career. And long story short, I went off and did a couple of other projects and then came back around some 6 years later. Ralph finally agreed to let me do it. So, but I am always been sort of socially active, a socially conscious person, and I've always very much enjoyed documentary films that take on difficult issues. And I felt that this, even though it is a 35, 40-year-old story, it still represents a larger overarching problem that we still face today. And just as you've all both alluded to, Laetrile was sort of like the very first big sort of so-called scandal, and when science collided with industry and patent availabilities and things like that. So the Laetrile story is sort of like the seedbed to where numerous things, as we've seen over the last few decades, have occurred. So, and I just felt like I love a good challenge too, and the very idea that it's 40 years old. I just said, if I can make this convincing, factually accurate, and bring it to the public on a commercial level, and which I've managed to do, I believe, then that I feel like I would have really accomplished something exciting. And again, not to mention it's a personal project for me because it took my life in a new direction when I picked up his book overall. So it's very exciting to be able to do it.
Well, thanks for your enthusiasm behind this project. And so Ralph, I would turn to you. So is the take-home message for patients here in 2014 to go to the health food store and start quaffing apricot pits, or to score illicit sources of injectable Laetrile, because Laetrile is the bomb for cancer?
No.
Okay.
No. First of all, in Dr. Segura's experiments, Laetrile didn't cure the cancers in the mice. What Laetrile did was dramatically decrease the number of metastases. So the most important thing by far was not that it was good for treating stage 4 cancer where the disease is already spread, but it should be tested in like stage 3 cancers where there's a high possibility of recurrence of the disease, and then they should give Laetrile to human patients to see whether it can prevent the spread of the disease, prevent the recurrence or the intensity, the grade of the tumor. That's the takeaway message, is that we need to apply a considerable amount of pressure on the main institutions like Memorial Sloan Kettering and the National Cancer Institute to get them to recommence proper studies with Laetrile. As I mentioned, this past month, two outstanding universities in Germany, the Goethe University in Frankfurt and the University of Göttingen, one of the top science universities in the world, confirmed that Laetrile could kill bladder cancer cells, three different cell lines. They repeated the experiment six times just to be on the safe side, and they just published it in the past month. So we know now that Laetrile can kill cancer cells. It can kill cervical cancer cells, prostate cancer cells, bladder cancer cells. Segura's work, it killed breast cancer cells. But it's more complicated than just running out and getting Laetrile. First of all, Laetrile taken by mouth, like apricot kernels, could be dangerous if you ate too many of them. So I don't want to be the person to tell somebody to go out and eat apricot kernels and have them say, these are delicious, I'm going to think I'll eat a whole bag of them, and they'll drop dead or wind up in the emergency room with cyanide poisoning. It could happen. Three times in the course of 30 years, people died from drinking medicine that was meant to be injected. So there is a small but real potential toxicity from overdosing on Laetrile. And this should only be something done after it's been thoroughly tested for both safety and effectiveness.
So you're arguing not for people to grab the stuff and utilize it. You're saying, let's keep an open mind.
Yeah.
Laetrile is the poster child
right.
for this type of cancer therapy that
right.
is a little off the beaten track, that
right.
is not corporately engineered and sponsored, is not a big pharma sourced
right.
Item that deserves more attention side by side with advanced cancer techniques.
Absolutely. And then, as I say, it is sort of the stalking horse or the representative for other techniques, other things that could be maybe even more beneficial. We know that there's a lot of evidence for melatonin, for instance, through human clinical trials.
I use it on virtually all my cancer
yes.
patients.
Mushroom extracts. There's a considerable amount of data from Asia. I myself have seen people have remissions of cancer using mushroom extracts. Fermented wheat germ extract. There are clinical trial. There's clinical trial data on that.
That's the Avabar product.
Yes, correct. And in general, what I see, I go around the world investigating and looking into clinics, and what I'm seeing more and more is a kind of skillful combination of heat therapy, hyperthermia, with immune therapy, the new darling child of conventional oncology, by the way. But that combination, which has been used in Germany and neighboring countries for nearly 40 years, is quite effective. Even I have seen even cases of stage 4 cancer that have gone into remission with skillful combinations of heat therapy and immune therapy. So I'm by no means an advocate for Laetrile the substance, or much less a salesman for Laetrile the substance. I really believe, though, that the record has to be set straight on this topic. So first of all, starting with Sloan Kettering and their so far obstinate refusal to acknowledge the real history of what happened in their own Laetrile testing. It will not damage the reputation of Sloan Kettering. It will enhance the reputation of Sloan Kettering, because they did the test that proved that Laetrile was effective at stopping metastases, and they should embrace that. And I want to mention that Eric has initiated a petition to get Sloan Kettering to reevaluate its position. Maybe he could talk to that.
I think this might be a good point for us to pause, because what we generally do is we divide these podcasts into two parts. So let's pause and invite our Intelligent Medicine listeners to join us for part two of today's Intelligent Medicine. We'll talk about the petition. We'll also talk more about innovative cancer treatments, and give you some more information about the new movie, Second Opinion. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.